You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Quiet, numbskulls, I'm broadcasting.
From the depths of the sea, this is Transmissions from Atlantis, a sci-fi, fantasy, and horror podcast with a special emphasis on Doctor Who. Featuring the creators of Seekers of the Lost Worlds, Rita and J.C. Delatorre.
Hey there, everybody. My name is J.C. Delatorre.
And I'm Rita Delatorre.
And this is Transmissions from Atlantis, episode 118. And in this episode, we, of course, are talking
Rogue One.
Rogue One. Maybe one of the best Star Wars movies ever made.
And apologies for the delay in getting the show out. But, you know, I had foot surgery, there's been issues, and we just haven't had time to sit down and get a chance to record.
Not only that, we actually had a major announcement a couple weeks ago. And that is that our movie, Seekers of the Lost Worlds, is actually taking on equity investors. So if you're interested in getting into the movie business and you're an investor type person that has, you know, some money to be able to invest, Secrets of the Lost World is looking for investors.
And just so you know, we've done an analysis and this movie will be profitable. So there is some money in this for you if you help us out.
Absolutely. So we went through the company slated and they project a few million dollars of profit. So, yeah.
So if somebody, for example, were to invest like about $40,000, guess what? You have the potential to make a couple million dollars in profit.
Yep. So, like I said, if you are an investor type person, or you know somebody that is an investor type person that's been eager to get into the movie business but doesn't want to lose their shirt, this may be their best opportunity to dip their toe into the movie finance arena. So that's what we've been up to, trying to drum up some additional funds to help finish up the movie. If you want more information on that, definitely check out our Facebook page, Seekers of the Lost Worlds, or seekersofthelostworlds.tv. Right?
Right.
Right. Also tonight, we are going to be talking Doctor Who's Christmas special. Doctor Who finally returns.
Yeah, for one episode.
But it's back, at least for one episode.
Yes.
And so we are going to be talking our favorite Doctor Who Christmas episodes, from top to bottom.
And because this will be the last show that we'll be doing for the year, we will do a year-end review for our rapid-fire section.
Yep, and we will be back in a few with Rapid Fire. All right, folks, for this week's Rapid Fire segment, we are talking 2016.
Best movie of the year, Rogue One. And we're about to review it.
Really?
Yeah.
Come on. There are some great movies this year. Captain America, Batman vs. Superman.
Okay, so are we trying to go back to, not Captain America, but now worst movie of the year, Batman vs. Superman.
Well,
best movie of the year. Go.
Kind of hard to argue with Rogue One. I hate to say it. Although Moana was great. Moana was a great movie.
Moana came in second this year, I think.
Yep. But, I mean, you got Captain America Civil War, Finding Dory.
Zootopia came out this year.
Yeah, The Jungle Book was great. Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. I mean, there were some great movies this year.
There was. But there's only one that's number one, and that's Rogue One.
Really? Not even Doctor Strange?
Nope.
Doctor Strange not getting any kind of love?
Nope.
Not even Independence Day?
No.
Star Trek Beyond? No?
Nope.
No?
Nope. Star Trek Beyond was great. Doctor Strange was fantastic. Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them was fantastic. Moana, I loved. But seriously, Rogue
Deadpool.
One.
Deadpool is 2016.
Rogue One, foo. All
right, so that's... All right, so that's movies. Moving on, television. What was the best television show of the year? And let's just limit it to new shows.
New shows that premiered this year.
Yes.
Voltron.
Yeah, Voltron. Yeah, I can't argue with that.
I mean, don't get me wrong, Westworld was great. But they brought back Voltron, and it was fantastic.
Yeah, Westworld was excellent. I like Designated Survivor. Timeless, once they got past the ripoff of Continuum Force, started to get a little bit better. But yeah, for new TV shows, I guess Voltron has to be it.
Yep,
that was Luke Cage, too.
Luke Cage was good, but Voltron is still top of my list on new shows for 2016.
Mm. Okay. So, that's TV, that's movies. Alright, what about shows that came back? What show that came back had the best year?
That's difficult, because we've been watching a lot of new stuff this year.
Mm-hmm. Well, Game of Thrones was great this year.
Game of Thrones was great this year. I'm not going to say The Walking Dead. I actually thought this past half season of Walking Dead was not great.
Well, I will say this. With The Walking Dead, I think it's getting a lot of criticism, more criticism than it needs to. I think a lot of the comic book fans are disappointed that there aren't any real surprises, that they pretty much kept pretty close to the comic book, which usually the comic book fans would be geeking out about. But I think it's made this season a little bit boring because you kind of know what's going to happen.
Well, that's the thing. That's why fans of the comic book love the show, because the show is unpredictable. Because they steer away from the comic and you get to enjoy the same story in a completely different way.
Right.
So if you start copying exactly what's in the comic book fans are going to get bored.
Yep, and I think that's kind of a little bit of what's happened, so... So you're losing some of them, and then there's the folks that were very upset that those certain individuals passed away in the first episode and the way that they passed away, and there are some people that just are turned off by Negan, which I think those people are insane, but still, there's...
To be honest, I get a little turned off by him, too.
Yeah.
Not to knock the actor, because he's fantastic, but... I think Negan's character, just for me, is a little too intense.
Yeah, and that's what he is. I mean, that's what Negan is. He's intense, he's insane.
If you think about it, this is kind of where I also stopped in the comic.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't really gone past Negan because of the fact that even in the comic book, I find him way too intense.
Yeah, and some people feel that he's a little bit over the top, and I get that, but... For me, I love Negan. I think Negan is the best character in The Walking Dead. So I am definitely not upset with The Walking Dead. I think it's still a great show, and I think the people that have jumped off the bandwagon are missing out on a great show. And, you know, now they've gotten to the point where Rick's going to stop being a pussy, so... So hopefully...
Yeah, thankfully that only lasted like...
Half a season,
yeah.
So
a few episodes.
Hopefully that'll start to pick up a little bit. So, Walking Dead was good. You mentioned Westworld. Westworld was definitely one of the highlights of the year in television. Of other shows that came back this year...
Supernatural's been getting a little bit better.
Yeah, Supernatural's been good. I don't have a problem with Supernatural. I'm trying to think of any other shows that stood out this year.
Gotham.
Oh, yeah, Gotham. I'm sorry, Gotham's been fantastic this year.
Yeah, it has. Yeah. I mean, and we're still trying to catch up on Gotham, because we... Again, with my foot surgery and everything else that we've had going on, we're we have a little bit of a backlog on stuff we need to watch, so we're a couple episodes behind on Gotham.
Yeah, but that's been great, though.
It's been a great season.
So, obviously, 2016 was a tough year on entertainers. We lost Prince this year. We lost David Bowie.
We've lost Alan Rickman.
There's just so many, many big celebrities that died.
The list of celebrities that have passed away this year has been staggering. It just seemed like it was never going to end.
And 2016's not done yet. 2016 just killed Zsa Zsa Gabor. I mean, you know, it just keeps going, man. I mean, this year needs to end for. And I'm just hoping that Shatner and... Well, maybe not Shatner, but...
Come on.
I'm hoping Betty White... I'm hoping Betty White makes it to 27.
Did you see the funny meme on Betty White?
Oh, with the Highlander. Yeah.
She's killing off all the celebrities because there can be only one.
She's the Highlander, yeah. So, yeah, I mean, it's been a rough year with entertainment. Personally, it's been a rough year for us. We lost a good friend in Sasha.
But on a good note, we did get to meet David Tennant this year.
Yes, we did get to meet David Tennant this year. He also made our first film this year. And,
we've had a very productive year.
Yeah, the funny thing about Seekers is that it's one of those things where it started out as we were just going to do this cheap little web series, little 10-minute vignettes, right?
That we were going to use as a learning process for filmmaking.
Yep. And then it grew into, maybe we'll make, a full show. Like an hour-long show. And then that grew into, we have a little bit more footage than an hour-long show. Maybe we can make this into a film. And so, yeah, we...
Then we were doing on-location shoots, building out a green screen studio, buying the best equipment we could get.
Yep. And...
Yeah.
Before we knew it, we were making a feature film. And, usually the way people start out is they, make a whole bunch of shorts... Yeah, and then work their way up to feature films.
No.
Reed and I go big. Yeah, Reed and I did one short, and then we went straight into feature filmmaking, and that's a little bit nuts. And it's been somewhat overwhelming, but it's been totally fun. And creatively, this has been one of the most exciting years for us, I think.
And that's the thing. The film is going to come out. I think we've had such a blast working on this thing. That I can't wait to start filming a new film or a sequel to Seekers.
Yeah, and the funny thing is that, if Seekers can do well enough, it could set us up for the next film, and then that film can lead to the next film, and then, maybe we'll work our way up to blockbusters. You never know.
Exactly.
Atlanta's not that far away, and Atlanta's the new Hollywood. So.
Yes, it is.
So, what do you look forward to in 2017?
I'm looking forward to hopefully you and I having the time and the money to be more creative with the things that we want to do.
Yep.
And the things that we want to produce.
Yep.
Like we're hoping to eventually do Star Mage, and it might end up being an animated feature film.
Yep, Star Mage as an animated film. That might take a couple years to produce, but at the same time, it's definitely something that we're going to start working on. I'm also looking forward to working on Dr. Geek. Dr. Geek, we've got some big plans for Dr. Geek in 2017, so keep an eye out for that. That's going to be real interesting. Reed and I are taking an active role in developing Dr. Geek for the visual medium, so it's something we're real excited about, and Scott and Debbie are very excited about, so hopefully that's something that we can look forward to. We've got a whole bunch of projects planned for 2017. Obviously, we still have Transmissions from Atlantis. We love talking to you guys. We will definitely be keeping active with that. And overall, for entertainment-wise, I think I'm looking forward to the new Spider-Man movie coming out.
Oh, and Beauty and the Beast.
Beauty and the Beast, of course.
And not to mention the second season of Voltron will be coming out next month.
Yep. And Doctor Who returns. Thank God Doctor Who returns. It's been a horrible, horrible year without
Doctor
Who. Sherlock
returns.
Sherlock returns for the final time. So, a lot to look forward to in 2017.
For years, Dr. Geek has toiled in obscurity, trying to realize the future through the science of applied geekdom. Pressured to prove his theories or lose funding, Dr. Geek has now opened the doors of his amazing laboratory to public participation and public collaboration. With the help of his partner, Mr. Flask, a test subject known as Mr. Creature, and a computer called the Deus Ex Machine, Dr. Geek conducts an investigation into the world of tomorrow, creating the future by discussing it.
Do you want me to turn down the oxygen in the labyrinth?
Oh boy, the things I get to do for science!
That's not a good sound.
And why is this sticky?
Join the discussion at www.drgeeklab.com.
Amazing thing of amazing things that I've ever been amazed with. Oh my god, it was so freaking awesome.
Well, here's the thing. Rogue One is kind of hard to put into context, because if you really think about it, it's a fanboy movie. Because it has so many throwbacks to the original Star Wars trilogy, that it just makes it... It's a fanboy movie. It really is. I mean, if Star Wars fans were to make a prequel, it would be Rogue One.
Yes.
And I kind of think that's what happened, you know? Somebody that absolutely loves Star Wars made that movie and was so meticulous in getting it right that they hit it out of the park. And, you know, we were all worried about, oh, man, Rogue One had to go through reshoots, and, you know, maybe it's not that great. And, folks, we had nothing to worry about, because Rogue One was fantastic.
I mean, not to knock The Force Awakens, because The Force Awakens woke my passion for Star Wars again. But Rogue One, I think, surpassed even The Force Awakens in so many ways. Mainly because of what Jason's already said, because it is a film for the fans. Should we put a little bit of a spoiler warning, just in case?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're reviewing Rogue One, so it goes without saying that we're going to be talking in some specifics. We're not going to give everything away.
No.
There are some things that we have to talk about that we just can't talk about without actually, you know, talking about some of the plot.
Spoilers.
You know, obviously, you've seen in the trailers that Darth Vader is in the movie, and oh my god, Vader.
Yes.
Oh my god.
See, we were afraid that we'd only see him for like 5 seconds and that was it.
Yeah.
It was going to be Luke Skywalker all over again. Where
right.
We see him right at the end of The Force Awakens and he doesn't speak not one word. No, that was not the case with Vader.
Yeah, and, you know, Vader was probably in the movie for...
5 minutes.
5 minutes at the most. But the way that they spaced it out made it feel like he was there for most of the movie. And, even more than that, oh my god, those 5 minutes.
First, you get to see his castle. You get to see Vader's castle.
Yes, on Mustafar.
Yeah.
Yeah, whatever the hell that place is called.
And it's like, oh my god.
The lava planet where he got all burnt up. Yeah, so you got to see Darth Vader's castle, which was rumored about and was talked about in Empire Strikes Back that you might see Vader's castle, but...
It never happened.
It never happened, right. But we finally got to see it, and everything that they did to make it match up to Star Wars A New Hope was just absolutely insane.
I was reading one article about how they went into the archives, the Lucasfilm archives, to find everything, all the schematics, all the film, everything that they used when they made A New Hope, that at one point they actually found footage that was never used in A New Hope, and they used it in Rogue One.
Yes. And not only that, I mean, their attention to detail. I mean, right down to when you see the Death Star plans, right?
Yes!
And it looks...
So pixelized!
And it looks exactly like it did in A New Hope.
Yes!
And you're like, that is awesome! And you know, that's, I think, for fans of The Force Awakens, A New Hope just kind of fervors that, you know, right? You know, it gives you even more passion for Star Wars, and you want to go back and watch A New Hope and Rogue One and A New Hope and the whole original trilogy all over again, right? But then, for people that absolutely hated The Force Awakens, thought J.J. Abrams did a terrible job with it, right? This is Disney's apology to those fans.
Yes.
Because... if you're a fan of Star Wars, I don't know how you could not love Rogue One. I honestly don't.
I agree.
Because it has so many nostalgia moments, you know, that just pull into your love of the original trilogy that if you don't love this movie, I question you as a Star Wars fan, to be honest with you. I hate to put it that way, but I don't see how you could not love this movie.
There was not one character that I disliked. I think every single character that they introduced as a rebel did such an amazing job that it just... it's funny because it wasn't a typical story when it comes to Star Wars. Because
right.
Even The Force Awakens got a little... mirror-ish when it came to A New Hope.
Yeah, I
for
mean,
for example,
I think The Force Awakens took elements from all three of the original trilogy
yes,
movies.
Exactly, but this film was a completely original idea.
But it wasn't though. Because
I know it wasn't. But again, it still was. Because it didn't follow the same structure as the other films have.
That's true. So the most interesting thing about Rogue One is that a lot of people got really upset because it didn't have the typical Star Wars crawl at the beginning. There's a reason for that.
Because it is a crawl. The whole movie is the crawl for The New Hope.
Yes, exactly.
It doesn't need a crawl because it is a crawl.
And I thought the filmmakers themselves were brilliant in, if you notice, in the very first scene of the movie, when they're showing that planet with the rings, the way that they put the rings make it look like the crawl.
Yes.
So it kind of is, you know, the crawl's there even though it's not really there, you know what I mean?
Exactly. It's like, this movie doesn't need a crawl because it is a crawl. Plain and simple.
Yes, and that's what I'm saying, that the story's not original, because we've already read this story in the crawl of A New Hope. But, like you said, it is a completely different Star Wars movie. It's very, very dark.
It is. It's
a dark movie There's a lot of violence. It's a war movie, is what it is. You know, if you're talking about Star Wars, it is a war movie. People die. There's a lot of blowing up of stuff. But it's not like Michael Bay blowing up, where it's not blowing up for no particular reason. It's a war zone.
And it showed so much more depth in the characters, as well as showing us things that we never seen before.
Mm-hmm.
Even though in we know now that this was a possibility in A New Hope, we just never saw it.
Yep. And it also answered some age-old Star Wars questions.
Oh, yeah.
And
how many debates have there been on why was that porthole there?
Yes.
That's been answered.
Rogue One answers the question as to why there was that flaw in the Death Star. And so that debate's over with. And now, after you see Rogue One and you watch A New Hope, A New Hope has a completely different meaning, because you realize the crawl doesn't do the justice of what the sacrifice was for the people in Rogue One.
Well, see, to me, I remember the towards the end of A New Hope, once Luke, Han, and Leia make it to Yavin, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is it Yavin or Yavin?
Yavin, I think. Yavin. Yeah.
And the one chick talks about, you know, the big sacrifice that was made in order to get these plans here. This movie is the sacrifice that was made.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I mean, it gives a whole new context to A New Hope. And it just makes Vader's is more of a badass. It tied into Rebels. You know, Star Wars Rebels, it tied directly into Star Wars Rebels. In fact, so much so, you even had the ghost, the ship of the Rebels.
Not to mention Hera was mentioned.
Well, it was either Hera or Hera's father, one or the other.
One or the other.
Yeah.
But here's the cool thing, is that many fans have this fear that the majority, or if not all the characters in the Star Wars Rebels TV series will be dead by the time A New Hope starts.
Right.
That might not necessarily be the case.
Right.
Which is cool.
Yep. And so, I personally think that Rogue One is right up there. You know, if you're going to rank Star Wars movies, for me, it always going to start with Empire. And Force Awakens is up there, too. I'm sorry. Force Awakens was one of the best Star Wars movies I've ever seen. And then, you know, obviously A New Hope is there. And then there's Rogue One. I mean, Rogue One is right there with the best of the Star Wars movies.
I think I would actually rate Rogue One higher than The Force Awakens, even though The Force Awakens was fantastic.
Well, you know, it's also where we just watched Rogue One, you know, so we're in the moment of Rogue One, and it's one of those things where you kind of forget how great The Force Awakens was, you know, in the light of Rogue One. Yeah.
Well, that might be true, but I mean, dang. Rogue One made me feel so many feels, and Force Awakens did too, but I think this one just made me even more happy.
Well, the one thing I will say about The Force Awakens is it made me cry. And Rogue One didn't make me cry. Rogue One made me very happy. Rogue One was what the George Lucas prequels should have been.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
But they weren't.
No.
Although, I will say this about Rogue One. They at least threw a little bit of the prequels in it. In that they are on Mustafar, you know, with Vader's castle. You see Vader is in the chamber, you know, trying to get his burns, you know, treated.
Not to mention Leia's adopted father.
Yes.
Also appears in Rogue One. And it's the same actor from the prequels.
Jimmy Smits, yep, exactly. So, I mean, there were still a lot of throwbacks to the prequels. So it didn't completely disown the prequels. The lady that played Mon Mothma also, I think she was cut from the prequels, if I'm not mistaken.
No, she was in it. I think she was in the last one.
Was she in the last one?
Yeah.
Well, either way, the same actress played her in Rogue One.
Yes.
But yeah, so a lot of people are saying that Rogue One's just pulled on the nostalgia trip, you know, that it wasn't really that great of a movie, that, you know, the only good thing about it was all the throwbacks, you know, all the Easter eggs. And
no, those people are crazies.
I thought as a movie in itself, I thought the story was good. I thought there was plenty of drama, plenty of action. There's not a single thing about Rogue One that I would change or complain about. You know, even I think you could overdo Vader. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and here's the thing. We never quite gave... Well, I'm not sure if we gave Force Awakens a 10 or not, but we still had...
Oh, we did. I think we gave it like a 12 or whatever.
But we still had our beefs
with
The Force Awakens.
Right.
But with Rogue One, I have no beef.
Yeah, I mean, some people say, well, I wish I could have seen more Vader. No, I think we had just the right amount of Vader. You don't want to overdo Vader. You don't want Vader throughout the entire movie, because to me, that's overdoing it, and it loses the impact of what Vader is.
I don't think the special effects were overdone.
No, and in fact, that's what I really love about this movie, is that it falls in line with A New Hope. You know, you can watch A New Hope right after watching Rogue One and feel you're still in the same time frame in the same universe. That's one of the things I hated about Star Trek. The new Star Trek movies, is that it feels...
It looks so different
from the original series. It is so far detached from the original 60s Star Trek. And it didn't have to be that way. It really... In fact, you can see it in Star Wars, how if you have an attention to detail, you can recreate that vibe. You know,
And without having it look cheesy.
Without having it look cheesy. And it plays so much better. I mean, when you see Grand Moff talking, you know...
Yes, folks. He makes an appearance.
Well, I mean, he's been in the trailer, so they know.
Yeah, but he's in it for a lot longer than people think.
And Peter Cushing's been dead since 1994. And he's a major character in this freaking movie. How do they do that? And you're telling me you couldn't have done that with Star Trek? I call bullshit on that. I'm sorry. I call bullshit on that. And so that's the right way to do it. You know, yes, it pulled a lot on the nostalgia strings, and that's probably why we love it so much, is because it took us back to the original trilogy, but that's what it's freaking supposed to do! It's a prequel! It's a prequel! And if you're not gonna do that, then why do it?
Exactly. If you're complaining about the nostalgia, again, maybe you're not a true Star Wars fan. Because that shouldn't be a complaint about this film.
Yeah. And that's one of the things that I don't like about the prequels, you know, the George Lucas prequels, is they feel, you know, too overdone with the special effects.
They don't feel like
they're in the same universe as the original trilogy. It feels totally disconnected.
I agree.
But Rogue One
100% on that
is interlocked with A New Hope. It's amazing.
And I've heard some people complaining about the soundtrack as well. But you know what? The soundtrack is not A New Hope, but it was still better than The Force Awakens soundtrack.
Yes, absolutely. I was actually really disappointed with John Williams' work on The Force Awakens, and Michael Giancano, I think is the way you pronounce his name. I thought he did a fantastic job with Rogue One. I thought the music was timely.
It was memorable.
There was some memorable pieces. Were there any epic, you know, Imperial March type stuff? No, you know, but it didn't need it.
It didn't need it. And you know what? The Imperial March didn't come in until Empire Strikes Back.
Right.
Because that's where it fit.
Yeah.
You're not going to put the Imperial March in every single film.
Exactly. But what I'm saying, I'm using the Imperial March as an example of type of music that you can use. You know, there wasn't any kind of Imperial March level of music that as soon as you hear it, it's going to be like, okay, that's Empire. You know, there wasn't anything like that in this movie. I will agree with that. But it still had a nice soundtrack that complemented the film well, and I thought had good flow to it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
All right, I don't think we even really need to rate this. I mean, we know this is a 10.
We know, this is surpasses any rating we could give it.
So. Yeah, I mean, so all I can say is go see it. Go see it a second time. Go see it a third time. Keep going to see it. Go see it. Watch A New Hope right afterwards. Then go see it again just to kind of remember all the stuff that you missed the first time around. I mean, there are just so many references to Star Wars in this film. It's
like we saw a whole bunch of Easter eggs the first time around, and we knew we only caught maybe a quarter of them.
Yeah. And Force Awakens had the same thing, too. They had, you know, Easter eggs all throughout the films.
But not like this.
But never. No. I mean, it's like I said, this movie interlocks. I mean, it isn't, you know, kind of like, you know, leading into it. It interlocks with A New Hope. Literally, A New Hope starts as soon as this movie ends. So, I mean, go see it. That's all we can say. Coming up next, we are going to talk Doctor Who. And it's the Christmas special is coming, and we will be talking about our favorite Christmas episodes of Doctor Who.
Hello there, this is Peter Capaldi. It is Doctor who I know wishes you the very happiest of Christmases and the most peaceful and wonderful New Year.
Hello, this is David Walliams wishing you all a very Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, everyone. I hope you have a lovely Christmas, lots of food and lots of snoozing, and hope you enjoy Doctor Who Christmas special.
Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year to all the Doctor Who fans out there.
Happy holidays from me, Matt Lucas, to all the Doctor Who fans, especially you.
To all the Doctor Who fans out there, Kuo Dunkiri Si Missi, Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year to Doctor Who fans everywhere.
Happy 2017 and 2018 and 2019 and 2122 and 3042 and 4749 and 8000 and all of them.
Hello, this is Nick Briggs, the voice of the Daleks, and you're listening to Transmissions from Atlantis. And I urge you to listen, or you will be exterminated!
Where is the Doctor now?
I haven't the faintest idea.
Is that credible?
It's true.
You're the woman he loves.
No, I'm not.
She's lying.
The Doctor does not and has never loved me. I'm not lying.
Confirmed. The life form is not lying.
Impossible. This is a trick.
No, it isn't.
My information is correct. You are the woman who loves the Doctor.
Yes, I am. I've never denied it. But whoever said he loved me back? He's the Doctor. He doesn't go around falling in love with people. And if you think he's anything that small or that ordinary, then you haven't the first idea of what you're dealing with.
Your Majesty, I assure you, she is the perfect bait. When this woman is in danger, the Doctor will always come.
Oh, you are a moron. No, he won't.
He's probably already here.
No, he isn't. Of course he isn't.
Possibly on this ship.
Well, go on. Scan it then. Go on, why don't you?
River.
Two hearts, stupid clothes. You can't miss him.
River.
Go on, scan the whole parsec. He's not here. God knows where he is right now, but I promise you, he's doing whatever the hell he wants and not giving a damn about me, and I'm just fine with that. When you love the Doctor, it's like loving the stars themselves. You don't expect a sunset to admire you back. And if I happen to find myself in danger, let me tell you, the Doctor is not stupid enough or sentimental enough, and he is certainly not in love enough to find himself standing in it with me.
Thank you.
All right, folks, so you all know that sound. It's time for Doctor Who, and it's Christmas, so obviously that means it's time for the Christmas episode. And since Doctor Who's return in 2005, we've come to associate Doctor Who and Christmas together.
Which is funny because other than one episode in 1965, there's never actually been an annual Christmas episode for Classic Who until the new series.
Right, exactly. So it's interesting that this has become a new tradition, and it's been going on for a decade. And so, obviously this year is the return of Dr. Mysterio, which is kind of funny because Dr. Mysterio is the name of the doctor in Hispanic countries.
Is it really?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
So, there's kind of a play on words with that. So, it's... What do you think of... From what you've seen of the trailers, what do you think of the Christmas episode coming?
I'm not sure. I don't know if I'm impressed yet with what I saw. For example, some of the characters in the trailer looked like they had that scar across their face, which looked very similar to the aliens that were in the last Christmas episode. In the wedding of the husbands of River Song.
Yes.
So that right there is already a bit of a turnoff for me, because if they're just going to rehash the same alien again instead of doing something new, I'm not too sure what I think about that. Hopefully I'm wrong.
Yep, and I'm not too sure about the superhero guy either.
Right? Yeah.
And it's going to be interesting to see how that all works together.
And here's the thing. We've already seen previous episodes of Doctor Who that take place in America, right?
Yep.
Where you have Brits trying to pull off American accents.
Yes.
That doesn't always work out very well.
Correct.
And I'm already getting a hint to that in this trailer.
It's possible. We'll see what happens. So, obviously, because it's such a tradition, we've got a bunch of Doctor Who Christmas specials to choose from. If you were to pick your favorite Doctor Who Christmas special, which one would it be?
Oh, that's an easy one. A Christmas Carol.
So 2010's A Christmas Carol.
Oh, yeah.
Why was that one such a great one for you?
Not only was the acting great, because, hello, Michael Gambon. You have Dumbledore, who was very amazing in that episode. But you also had an incredible, incredible soundtrack.
Yes.
That, to me, is timeless. Abigail's song. I actually add that as part of my Christmas playlist.
Yep, absolutely.
To me, that's a Christmas song.
Yeah, I gotta agree with you there. Murray Gold was at the top of his game with that particular episode.
The writing in that episode was fantastic.
The writing was good. It was a good story. It was whimsy. It was one of those Matt Smith episodes that it's only Matt Smith's Doctor could have pulled off that episode.
I agree.
Because it was just the right kind of fanciful and goofiness, and I mean, with the shark, and
and how cool is that?
The floating fish. I mean,
you're on a planet where you have fish that swim in the fog,
yeah,
because of the ice crystals or whatever. Either way, that was always so cool. I'm like, okay, right. We get to live in an aquarium.
Yeah, it was such a unique episode, a well written episode by Stephen Moffat, and it's just one of those episodes that. It was memorable. It stood out from a bunch of the other ones. If I was to rank my favorite, I have to say The End of Time Part 1 was my favorite. The reason is because it's the end of David Tennant's run.
It's
the start of the end, right.
Yeah.
Because they ended it on New Year's Day, actually. But it also was the return of the Master. It wrapped up the Master storyline. It brought back Gallifrey, even if it was just for a few moments. And to me, it also gave you a window into the Time War for the first time.
Yes.
You know, and that, for me, was a mind-blowing episode. More than any other episode that has aired on Christmas Day for Doctor Who.
No, but then you also have the time of the Doctor, which was Matt's ending.
Yeah. The problem with the time of the Doctor is I just didn't think it was a very good episode. I thought it was one of all the major episodes that happened in 2013, the name of the Doctor and the day of the Doctor. And then you
night
had
of the Doctor.
The night of the Doctor. Of the Doctor. And then you have the time of the Doctor. The time when you have all of those major events.
It felt a little anticlimactic.
The time of the Doctor was a little anticlimactic, without a doubt.
And here's the thing. The Christmas invasion took place on Christmas Day, right?
Yep.
Same thing with the Runaway Bride, Voyage of the Damned. The Next Doctor, Christmas Carol, pretty much everything, including the snowman.
Yep.
Everything was very Christmas-related.
Yep.
Now, in the time of the Doctor, the only thing that was really Christmas-related were two things. It was Christmas on Earth, for the few times that we saw Clara actually having Christmas with her family, and that was very few.
Yep.
And he happened to be in a town in Trenzalore called Christmas.
Christmas, which made absolutely no friggin' sense.
That made no sense. Why would there be a town called Christmas in Trenzalore? That was just weird.
But for me, that wasn't the worst of the Christmas episodes. The worst Christmas episode, in my personal opinion, was The Doctor, the Widow, and the Wardrobe.
I don't necessarily that episode agree with
was
that.
Horrible.
It was cute.
It was horrible.
I liked it. I totally liked it. It had this nice happy ending. I love the mom.
Oh, God.
I absolutely love the mom because she didn't take any bull.
The villains
she
were.
She was just so matter of fact. She's like, oh, okay, you're an alien. Here's your spaceship. Okay, bye bye.
The villain were trees. Trees!
The villains were not trees. There was actually no villain in that episode.
And that's even more of it. I mean,
there doesn't have to be a villain.
Ah.
But there was still a conflict. It was more of a matter of timing.
Meh.
But I did not hate the Doctor, the Widow, and the Wardrobe. I actually really enjoyed that. It's not my favorite, but
me.
I don't hate it.
Me. It was me. I will say that the Husbands of River Song is right up there with one of the best. Going back all the way to Silence in the Library, setting it up to be exactly Silence in the Library.
Yeah. And
right down to giving her the sonic screwdriver that's in the Silence in the Library.
And I was just thinking about this because at the end of The Husbands of River Song, River finds out that a night on that planet lasts 24 years, right? So she's got 24 years with the Doctor before, you know, she goes off to the library.
Right.
But by the time we get to this new Christmas episode, that time would have been over.
We would think, right?
Yeah. So he's going to be fresh from sending her off to the library.
Yep.
So I wonder if there's going to be any mention of that, because that'd be sad.
Well, with Nardole being there, it'll be interesting to see how that... First of all, how does Nardole get his body back?
Yeah. I'm sure they'll explain it.
Maybe the Doctor will jump into the future or into the past before he gets
decapitated.
Yeah.
Yeah. But from what I've seen on the couple trailers for this latest Christmas episode, honestly, I'm not impressed.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. The Christmas Invasion wasn't one of my favorites. I thought it was one of the weaker of the David Tennant episodes.
Because it was Dr. Light.
Yeah, it was his first, and, you know, basically the Doctor slept through most of the episodes, so it's kind of like, eh.
The Runaway Bride was our first introduction to Donna, and even though she ended up being one of my all-time favorite companions...
I hated her in that episode.
I didn't. I thought it was great.
In The Runaway Bride, I could not stand Donna. Now, I love Donna as a companion, you know, through her entire run as a companion in Doctor Who, but... Yeah, I could not stand Donna in The Runaway Bride. I thought she was obnoxious. I thought she was annoying. Oh, God, I couldn't stand her. Voyage of the Damned was a great, great Christmas episode.
Hello, Titanic in space.
Well, I mean, besides that, I mean, I loved Astrid, I think her name was.
She would have made such a great
She would have made a fantastic companion.
She's one of those people that kind of came and went, and we would have wished that they had been a companion, kind of like Sally Sparrow.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, the funny thing about the end of Time Part 1 is that I rarely seem to think of that as a Christmas episode in my head for some reason. Probably because it's part of a two-parter.
Yep.
And really,
the only references to Christmas is maybe a Christmas tree in the corner or something.
Yeah,
like
that. It's really just decorations that you see.
Yeah.
You know it's happening during Christmas.
And I think Rassilon at some point mentions that it was Christmas Day. But other than that,
yeah,
you know.
But it's weird because it doesn't have the same flow as all the other Christmas episodes do. Yep. This one's the only one that's not its own standalone episode.
I also didn't think much of the next Doctor either. I mean,
I thought it was cute.
It was a good episode. I don't want to say it was a bad episode. I thought the guest doctor, or Dr. Light, or whatever you want to call him, it was an interesting story. I thought there was a few plot holes in it.
But this is one of those episodes, again, where aside from the fact that it's snowing and you know what happens to be Christmas time and see decorations, the story itself doesn't really revolve around Christmas.
Mm-hmm. The Snowman, 2012's The Snowman. I remember how excited we were to see Clara as, you know, the new companion, because we thought this is where we're getting the new companion. And then Moffat moffed us again.
Yes, he did.
And that's what ruins that episode for me, is the fact that at the end he moffs us.
But, you know, once you understand what how it all was works, yeah. And the Impossible Girl, that episode couldn't have gone any other way.
I agree, but he still moffed us. And he did. Frankly, the governess version of Clara was so much better than modern day Clara.
Oh, yes.
I mean,
she was a lot more sassy.
That was a companion that I fell in love with, was the governess Clara. And the Clara that we got, oh my God. Don't get me started on Clara.
All right, so we already talked about the time of the Doctor, and let's talk Last Christmas.
I think this is an underrated Christmas episode, because it wasn't exactly a normal Christmas episode, because I felt it was kind of scary. You know, it was
dark. It was a little dark.
It was a bit dark, but
it had Santa in it.
It had Santa in it, and it was just a very interesting take on Doctor Who. It was something you don't normally see in Doctor Who. There was a little bit of alien in it, I think, you know, with the face hugger, you know, parasite things. And it was just, it was a very creepy episode, but I liked it. I enjoyed it.
And here's another thing. Remember in Last Christmas, when the one chick first enters the infirmary and she's listening to that one Christmas song and she starts kind of dancing to it to not think about what else is going on around her?
Mm-hmm.
That's not the first time we've heard that Christmas song. They've played that in two other Christmas episodes.
Hmm.
And rewatching the Christmas episodes, I recognize that song now.
Really?
Huh. Yes. They played it a few other times.
What other episodes did they play it in?
It was definitely in Runaway Bride. And I'd like to say, no, not Voyage of the Damned. It might have been in Christmas Invasion as well.
Hmm. Okay. Interesting.
Because those are taking place in and around Earth, especially the Runaway Bride and the Christmas Invasion, I think it's a popular British Christmas song, and why it got played a lot.
Yep. So, yes, we're excited about the return of Doctor Who. We're a little nervous about what the trailer showed, but at the same time, it's new Doctor Who. We finally get new Doctor Who.
Oh, yes.
And hopefully it's a precursor to a great 2017, you know, where we get full season of Doctor Who, thank goodness. And I'm looking forward to it. It should be interesting. And it's the final year of the Moff. So I'm hoping that Moff saved his best for last. We'll see. All right, folks, that's going to do it for this episode of Transmissions from Atlantis, our last episode of 2016. Thank goodness.
Not that we don't love doing the show, but it's been, like we said, it's been a wild year.
It's been a crazy, crazy year. And we want to wish you and your family a very happy Christmas, or
happy Hanukkah.
Happy Hanukkah,
happy
or
Kwanzaa,
Saturnalia.
What?
Saturnalia. Oh. That's the Roman a holiday that Christmas is based upon.
Oh. Okay. Never heard of that one.
Yep. And, of course, happy Ramadan, I guess, or whatever it is for the Muslims. I think it's Ramadan, right?
It is Ramadan. I don't think it's until the beginning of the year.
Oh, is it? Okay, well, we won't be on until later in January anyway, so... And
happy whatever you celebrate.
Happy whatever you celebrate. If you're atheist, then happy Festivus for the rest of us. And so, obviously, next episode we were going to be talking Doctor Who. The new episode of Doctor Who will probably be recapping a little bit of The Walking Dead, since we didn't really get into it much this particular episode. And we'll get a little bit more into Westworld, because it was an interesting end to Westworld. And, I don't know, Game of Thrones doesn't start till like, April or something, right?
Yeah.
So we won't be talking Game of Thrones yet. But I'm sure we'll be talking a whole bunch of stuff. Again, if you're interested in investing in the movies, if you're an investor, one of those rich hedge fund folks that, you know, have money to burn and have been looking to get into the movie business.
Even if you're just Joe Schmo from wherever and you just... think it'd be cool to be an executive producer, our movie's the movie for you.
Yep. So definitely check us out on Facebook or on seekersofthelostworlds.tv, our website, where we have all of our links and info and all that good stuff on there. And until next time,
allons-y.
Allons-y. Goodbye, everybody.
Allons-y. I should say allons-y more often. Allons-y. Look sharp, Rose Tyler. Allons-y. And then... it would be really brilliant if I met someone called Alonzo, because then I could say Alonzo every time.
Been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at esonetwork.com.